This is a production of Cornell University.
CPSA meeting, March 14th, 2011.
We are going to get started, and so today is the second to last CPSA business meeting of the official calendar, but that will alter in terminology depending on the outcome of the charter. And so today the main object we are talking about is, in fact, the charter. So at first we're going to go through roll call of the voting membership, and then anyone who is not a voting member, we're going to have you introduce yourself. So we'll go through. Kyle.
Here.
Steven. You. Tom.
Hello.
Nicole.
Here.
Chris Clark.
Hi.
Evan Corton.
Present.
Billy.
Here.
Bobby.
Here.
Ben is absent because his wife is having a baby at the moment.
What kind of an excuse is that?
Yes, I think there's some things that are more important.
Oh, that was my
guess. Chris Heckman.
Here.
Yevgeny.
Here.
Me.
Here.
Siska.
Here.
Jen.
Here.
And there's Steven. Mia. Nantogva. And we have one item before we introduce the non-voting membership at the moment, is the fact that Asha is unable to attend any of the next couple of meetings, so she has given up her seat, and so she will not count towards quorum today or towards the voting membership. Her seat is considered unseated at the moment. All right, now we'll go around and introduce the people I did not call. It looks like let's start with Marquis. I think that covers everyone. All right, and so in seeing that, the first thing we're going to go through on the agenda is a executive committee or committee reports. So if the committee reports are given, keep them very brief because we're going to try to move right into the charter language. So the first thing is from the executive committee. Last week was the trustee weekend, and so I had to give a report, both written and verbal, to the trusteeship. And so in the report, I focused primarily on reiterating the graduate community initiative and then also discussing briefly some of the comments that are going around drifting, redefining the role of graduate students after they pass their A exam. And so both Stephen and Nicole were actually at the trustee presentation. Do you have any comments that you'd like to follow up? And Amy. Sorry, Amy. Any questions or comments based off of the trustee?
Can't
be back. Not really, no. It's
good just to get the PCI again.
Exactly, yeah. Tom, do you have any updates from the operations and staffing that does not revolve the charter? None. Jen, anything from the executive vice presidentship or communications committee?
Any questions for Jen at all?
Seeing none, we'll move on. The event committee, what's the goal?
Okay, so as you can see, wrap up, stuff is up. We're going to be starting the marketing event basically tomorrow, but I would really like to have 100 posters here, and I'd really like for you guys to take them and put them up in your building. We also have members of the committee do that, but not until after Thursday, so once these go up, yeah. And you're going to see a copy of them. You see, the theme is Mad Men, okay? 1960s, early 1960s, Lamb, Lamb, And so, yeah, so a lot of information will be up on the website, cornelluniversity.com. The tickets will be on sale in Day Hall. There'll also be, and probably tomorrow as well, there'll also be sending out requests for volunteers. So if you want to get in for free and you don't mind spending a couple hours and you can keep them standing, you'll be able to sign up on a Google Doc form when it comes to that. And you'll also be expected to attend a orientation meeting the next 4 years that Thursday. So that's really the main information.
Any questions for Nicole? Seeing none?
Oh.
Seeing none, we'll move on. Marquise, do you have any updates from the student? No updates. Kyle, any updates from the appropriations?
Well, we're delaying our presentation
now,
but we've got to revisit some of the meeting.
Bobby, any updates from the finance committee?
Nope.
Billy, any updates from the Ad Hoc Environmental Sustainability Committee? Evan, any updates from the survey committee?
Two very quick things. First, we thank those of you who submitted your feedback. You'll hear from us. We've implemented what we can and what we can't. We will keep around the next time we do the survey. Second thing, the SRI did the programming for us, and we saw a draft today. There are some bugs, but it's looking good.
Any questions for Evan at all? Seeing none, we move on. Any updates from any of the liaisons at this time? And seeing none, we'll move on into the agenda. So as mentioned, Resolution 7 is not actually going to be discussed today. It was not circulated 24 hours prior and stipulated by the charter that we could not discuss it during this time period. We can discuss it informally after the rest of the business is done so we can get a view of what we are going to be moving forward to and actually voting on sometime in the future. So we're actually going to skip right down on to discussing Resolution 6 in the agenda, which is the charter review process and actually voting on that hopefully at one point this evening. And so in that process, Tom will take it over, and I hope you've all had a chance to review the documents and the associated slides that were sent out previously and also the methodology that we'll be following this evening. So what's going to happen is Tom's going to do a short presentation, and then we move into the opportunity to have a formal discussion if we desire, and that's where somebody has the opportunity to formally speak out against the resolution, and then we move into a formal debate period. If no one speaks out formally against the resolution, we can just go into an informal debate period in which people are allowed to ask questions and propose amendments. I would reserve the first 10 minutes just for asking questions and clarifications, and then we'll go through the amendments that were previously circulated, and then we'll open it up to any other amendments from the floor. So that's kind of the guidelines. Any questions with what's going to be happening today? Yes, Chris.
How many members do we have present?
Currently, we have more than two-thirds. We have 16 out of the 18 seated members. So we have enough to actually pass the resolution if all, what is it, 14 votes? In favor? 12 votes in favor.
That's my question. Is it 12 to pass?
So two-thirds to pass. So 12 is to pass.
Not two-thirds plus one.
No.
Okay.
Typically, on the charter, it's two-thirds to pass. So if you hit the 56%, then you're fine. So it's 12. And then also, Rhonda will be showing up later this evening, and she'll count for four when she arrives. And so by the time we actually vote on this, we should have 17 members, and then we'll need 13. All right. So moving forward, we'll switch over. Tom, you have the floor.
All right. You have my presentation.
Yeah, that'll be. Yes, okay. All right, there we go. So this is the
okay. So how many were here at the last meeting, the last business meeting? Okay, I just got to pass the charter. Oh, got ya. All right. So here we have three major types of changes. All right. So what I want to do tonight is review briefly for all those who raised their hand the changes that I'm going to present in this resolution, with the hope that you'll raise your hand when it comes time for a vote. So to articulate three different changes, the first was the membership. and the DCSA charter is going to be affected in Article 2 and Article 4, mostly in Article 4. The second change is procedures, and that's going to be affected in the new DCSA bylaws, Item 4. And then the final set of changes are to the committee structure, and they affect the charter and the bylaws. And the charter is Article 5, the officers, and Article 6, the committees. And in the bylaws, Item 3, committees. So what I've done is I've reduced the presentation from last time, not to completely recapitulate, but I'm going to instead highlight the talking points. Next slide, please. So before I get to that, let me remind us where we all are in the timeline. This slide has been my omnipresent guiding force in trying to get myself motivated to see this through, and here we are, it's a big day. March 14th, business meeting, the resolution is debated by voting members, and it can even be voted on with your pleasure. And so if that happens, the April 4th discussion, April 18th business meetings will become meetings as opposed to discussion of business. And the executive officers will need to retool, perhaps, those two meetings in sight. It will also affect election outcomes. So there's a lot of writing on it, so it's important that we be mindful. We have two meetings left that are currently scheduled, but a revised charter would affect how those two meetings might be conducted. Next slide. So, talking points. I'm going to talk not about everything that's being changed, but rather throw out some discussion points as if I were offering my take on what we should talk about in the next hour. This is not necessarily what we need discussed in order or even all of it, but if I were to point out some things that I would want to hear directly from each of you on, they would be on Charter, Article 4, membership, and bylaws, Items 3 and 4, committees and procedures. So now, in the slides that follow, I'm going to highlight in red some of the talking points that, you know, if you want to jot some notes down or whatever, we can get back to them, and I think they could produce the fruitful discussion I want to have. Next slide, please. So let's go and do the membership changes. In Article 4, we did something that has turned out to have produced has already produced a conversation, and that is we've added to the responsibilities of the field representatives this line, which again is in red. It's new, you know, it's new, but it's also a talking point for tonight. That's why I highlighted in red. So the field representatives can now elect GCSA officers and standing committee chairs. One of the amendments that has already come in this process addresses that question, and I think that's a good talking point and a good debate for us to have. I'm not going to raise the merit either way, but when we get into that, I'll be called on and I may be allowed to speak on behalf of the proposed language here, because I do stand by everything on the page tonight. Next slide. Another one that is related to membership that I want to be a talking point tonight is the schedule of the election. In the charter, it specifically says that the voting members of the graduate field will be elected at the second to last GCSA meeting of the academic year. And what this means is that April 4th, the meeting coming up, we would be forced by charter to vote on the new members. This is in practice what's been done. And what we might want to ask ourselves is if we want to mandate this to be here as written. Because it could also be written as before the last meeting. We're trying to build a flexible charter, and this is one of the few places where we mandate that the body do things at particular meetings. We rarely do this. But elections seem to have a kind of force in their own right, and they need to be regulated. So what I want to talk about is, have we regulated elections too much, or have we done it appropriately, and is the body willing to make this a sort of cast-in-stone way of conducting elections? On the topic of procedural changes, next slide. There, in the new section on, now, so the procedures have moved to the bylaws. I think that's been vetted. I think people understand why we're doing that. But one of the things that is being talked about is absences. So currently, the absence system relies on the record keeping of the executive, and we're going to continue to do that. And so it's not controversial to say that then the executive vice president must be notified as opposed to the president. what I do want to talk about is whether voting members may be unseated for their unexcused absences or they will be unseated. The may provides all the world of discretion to the executive who considers these things. And so I am presenting may, and as opposed to an automatic will. One of the things this implies is that the executive board is functional, and that they will be meeting or talking regularly enough to handle these matters. But it seems to me that if we're giving the executive board discretion on a number of topics related to membership and absences, that this might be yet another level of discretion that they have the ability to unseat a member who meets this criteria, but they're not necessarily required to do so. And therefore, you'll also see here, uncontroversially, this was here before, may be reseated. So the language of may versus will, the idea of contingency and power of the executive board is at stake. And then this, again, it follows through in terms of removal. So absences and removal are related because the language seated and unseated distinctions are made. Next slide, please. So now on the third part of committee changes. Next. Here we should have some more talking points as well for tonight. I'm putting Article 4 under committee changes because officers chair committees. 5.02, election of officers, that they will be elected at the last regularly scheduled meeting of the academic year. Now this dovetails off the amendment or possibly the discussion we should have about elections of voting members being held at the second to last regularly scheduled meeting of the year. In practice, the two things I've highlighted are how the GCSA currently operates. What is under consideration here is whether or not there is a way to change this that would be better for the body. The reason I stand by this, I'll just point out, is that it separates in the charter the two elections. And that is a good thing because, and we should talk about this, because having voting members elected and then having the election of officers immediately following may not allow for people to have the appropriate time to consider that they might want to be an officer. And the point of this is to give people the chance to consider the positions, and in practice we would have a presentation on the positions after the election of the voting members, get people thinking. It gives the election committee, which is composed of outgoing executives, the chance to recruit people, and we need those 2 weeks to do it. Last year, to remind you, Nighthawk had said, well, we could have it on the same night, why not? But now we're saying, no, you can't ever do that, because this is the preferred way to proceed with elections, having it at the following meeting of the voting members. And then here, too, highlighting this part, that all GPSA members shall be eligible to elect officers. This goes back to the part about Article 4, the membership, that the field representatives have the right, or rather the responsibility, to vote for officers. And here again it's articulated, so it raises a talking point insofar as it relates back to the previous one there. Now, let's go into some of the other ones that I'd love to hear more about, and that is under bylaws, item 3, under the operations of the staffing committee. Under duties, as currently written, item 3 is in coordination with the entire body of the GPSA and interested individuals. The committee shall ensure that practices of the GPSA at meetings and campus activities are environmentally sustainable. So this is the so-called solution to how to deal with the ad hoc sustainability committee that's emerged this year and in past years, how to incorporate the good energy of that group into the GPSA while we hope maintaining the ability for interested students that of course form their own student groups, and of course work through the university assembly, which is getting its feet on the ground with relation to a number of issues, including sustainability. But this is something I'd be interested to hear more about, and this is how it currently stands if we vote in this chart next. And then communications likewise have the addition of a diversity focus group, let's call it, and that's the part we can talk about. Are we okay with focus groups as listed? I didn't take the step of defining it anywhere within the bylaws. I felt that procedurally this would be perhaps cumbersome to try to have to do such a thing. We don't define the word committee or subcommittee. We rely on Robert's rules for that. And while focus group is perhaps an ambiguous, undifferentiated phrase, at the same time, it's pretty clear what it does. So I think if we're comfortable with the language of focus groups, if we think it has some enforceability that all of our other provisions of the bylaws have, then I'm willing to move beyond any more semantic debate on it and go forward with the spirit of it. And so that, therefore, you should also then remember that the mental wellness focus group would act in the same way. And so I highlight that as a talking point. Finally, I highlight the change of name of the Graduate Professional Student Programming Board. I think people have had a chance to sit on that for a meeting now and dwell on it. And Nicole has, I think, presented it to the general body. And the reason I think it needs to be talked about again is that I personally think unless the GPSA is going to support this group in the kind of way it needs in terms of recruiting the four officer positions that are required for violent funding applications, that we ought not pretend that one person ought to do this job on its own. So I think perhaps a resolution should be passed at the next meeting that if this charter and bylaws are passed, that the GPSA is committed to seeing this group brought in the way it's been articulated by Nicole. Because there's risk right now that if she were to, not show up tomorrow, this thing will die. So we never want something to be in the hands of one person. We want the body to have, of course. Now, just no statement on any individual member. Think of how things work in the center. And then, that's my formal remarks on the charter and liaison. Let me thank the contributors who have not only helped in the original preparation of the document, but also those who contributed amendments and changes to the to what you see here. Before I pass the floor back to Preston, I wanted to say something about my sense of the charter and bylaws at this stand and what I think, what we're doing, why we're doing it. So, first, I said this before and I want to reiterate that the current charter and bylaws are workable documents that have served the GPSA for 2 years. The bylaws of this year, 2010-11, were modified as per requirement, and some changes were made to this year's bylaws. And they were done in the spirit of improving how the body works. That same spirit, I think, carried over into this process, which is going to be the last time we formally review the charter by mandate, but should not be the last time the charter is reviewed. The way the new charter and bylaws are written, it continues to encourage the operations of the staffing committee to be the keepers of these documents, to be the person who make sure the changes are implemented, and in fact, the word review is still in the bylaws, but not in the kind that has been conducted this past year. This year has been a wholesale reevaluation or reimagination of the GPSA charter and bylaws. Not everything that was discussed in the various meetings that we've had throughout this year are included in this document. So my point is that the process of revising the charter bylaws is ongoing. We should pass this tonight, with whether or not the amendments are included. We should pass it, and we should move on with the business of the GPSA. This has been crippling too many members from other business for too long, including myself. I have not had the ability to do the kind of work in resolutions. This is why I came to the GPSA. I've had to focus on this matter. And I think many of us feel that way. So I draw your attention to Resolution 6, whereas. And this is a history, if you will, of this resolution. This resolution has been a long time coming. And so I want to say thank you to everyone who contributed this and my co-sponsors. I would be willing to take friendly amendments to the wording of this resolution. Less willing to take friendly amendments to the charter and bylaws, since the time for that has more or less passed. And looking forward to the conversation we have on these issues and others tonight and in the remaining meeting of the year.
Thank you very much. And seeing that he has yielded his time, there is now an opportunity for anyone to speak formally against Resolution 6, the charter and bylaws amendments. Is there any member present who wishes to do so? being done, we'll close the formal portion of this debate and move into an informal debate, at which period any questions may be asked to any member, to Tom, to any other member of the committee, to any member present. And I'd ask that 10 minutes of this question and answers be exhausted before we start to discuss possible amendments. And I will record on based off of the hands as I see them. So the first one is Yevgeny and Brian.
The question about debate, where would it be?
So the question is one that if the bylaws are changed you're asking a good question. The question is not answered by these documents. That's my first thing I want to say. But item 4 of the new bylaws, which is the old Article 7 charter, specifically points out two things that are relevant to your question. One, that the executive board is charged to formulate the agenda of all meetings. And two, that meetings shall have business and discussion as deemed appropriate by that same board. So this is the chance for you people who want to become executives to bring your vision. The GPSA just opened up with this resolution. And that's important to note. So whether or not we have this kind of structure, or whether or not we're meeting in Willow Street, Milan Hall, Kennedy Hall, Goldsmith Hall, that is the question of the executive board. Yeah. In this chart.
Brian, you have the next question?
First, if I have to take this next question. When Tom said that they were except for the election, specific dates, there are specific dates mentioned within the bylaws, and the committee has to contact appropriations within 2 weeks of a GPSA meeting with their budget. So there is another set date within the document. And my question is, it's actually about my position here. Is council considered an officer? And the reason I ask this is because in that statement, in the elections, you say you shall elect the president, executive vice president, BPO, and council. A, is council an officer? And two, we're not required to have council.
Yeah. I'm sensitive that this question comes from personal experience. And possibly future experience of others in this conversation. The problem is we have a position that is so ambiguously defined that the GPSA has no mandate to fill the council position. Because if pre-requirement number one is not met, namely that the person has executive experience, if no person with executive experience emerges in front of the council, it is therefore vacant. You cannot insist upon it. It's not like the GPSA wants to have an at-large position. Okay, now anyone else can become a council. Vestigial organ. It's sort of there, but it's not part of the executive committee per se.
Because I'm just worried that having that language there sort of implies, I understand it is written, but I'm afraid the way that sort of implies what happens going on at council. Is that we need to have council lawyers?
So, I probably don't
know. Brian, honestly, you were the first council, right?
No.
Okay. Sure. You're the third council, and there have been years where there hasn't been council. I think that's what would happen in my point of experience.
Okay.
Chris, do you have the next question?
You mentioned minor proposed amendments to the resolution. I just have a couple of things. Can we go on just one separately?
If they're friendly amendments, you don't have to vote on
But I guess the biggest one which I think so friendly is first. Resolve clause that be further resolved, and I think kick them out, and therefore resolve get further. Swap out those two. Yeah, they got pushed around. That's one I have like motion there. Lack or F clause, where I can choose about you could take the offer more easily and efficiently. It is between how common after efficiently. Around the world. And the last one is whereas the changes made to the governing documents of the GPSA, it's too short, changes to plural. Final.
Could you repeat that last one?
Yes. Whereas the changes made to the governing documents of the GPSA should be short. Changes to short.
Yes. And the comma one before that?
Oh, gosh. The last whereas clause. Whereas the changes allow the GPSA to operate more peacefully and efficiently, no comma, and you go through.
All right.
And the absolute last one is on page one, whereas it's used, as you see the history of the working documents of the GPSA, no comma, the GPSA. GPSA, no comma, to section.
So whereas the committee has reviewed the history of the working documents of the GPSA, yes. There's no comma?
No comma.
Are those accepted as friendly?
Yes. Yeah. All right, Tom, I appreciate it. I'm probably writing for you. Okay. I have to see
before. Are there any other questions or comments? Yes.
While we're doing friendly amendments on small points, Robert's rule says that whereas clauses are all one big sentence, so they should all be separated by semicolons, which they are. But the final whereas clause should end with a period. Also, Robert's rule says that each resolve clause should be a sentence. Some of them end with periods, but some end with semicolons. So the semicolons should be periods.
Are those accepted as friendly?
Yes. Thank you. I still
have the floor.
Yes.
On a totally unrelated thing. It's maybe worth mentioning because this charter discussion has now gone on for something like 18 months, various different things that are not contained in this proposed thing. One thing that is not contained is giving the vote to all field representatives. I know there's been some confusion about this. This was an idea that exploded. This was discussed in R16 last year. This was discussed this year. That's not in this document. We retain that separate structure of field representatives and voting members. Something else that's not in here that was discussed but rejected is a strict attendance requirement for field representatives. All that remains is what we had before. There's a line in the funding guidelines, not the charter or the bylaws, it says the EVP shall notify the FC chair of a sustained vacancy of the field representative position so that their funding can be free. If that has ever happened, I don't know. But this was something that I think is agreed by perhaps this whole body, certainly by the committee, was that beating field reps over the head with a stick is probably not a good way to increase involvement.
Are there any other questions or comments at this time? Yes, Billy.
I kind of have a question related to that. I was at all of the charter review meetings, but something that came up in the last meeting's breakout session that I was in, I thought was a great idea, and I wish I had brought it up earlier. But did you discuss at all, as far as trying to get the field reps more involved, the possibility of having a meeting structure where you need to break out sessions before you go to a resolution?
Yes. So much is implied in these new bylaws that we rely on the good momentum of the year that precedes what is written here to dictate those meeting formats. We would feel a formal statement like that in the bylaws has no place, but we feel that it's the kind of institutional knowledge that would be passed down to each executive through the letter that's supposed to be submitted to them and the transition period. So that's a great idea, and I feel it's up to the people who emerge out of this room and the leaders to implement that.
It's worth saying very quickly that the new charter and bylaws allow for exactly that, whereas under the old charter and bylaws, that would be much more difficult because resolutions would only be discussed at business meetings, at which field reps are usually not present. So the new changes allow for that, but they don't mandate it.
And just a chair interjection at the moment. There would be a difficulty surrounding that just with Robert's rules of order. We'd have to declare the meeting that that starts until the discussion period is over. Because there's actually a structured way of what meetings are supposed to be conducted. But that would just be a technicality that the incoming executive committee would be able to take over.
Do you feel like the technicality now that question that would be structured. Did you take recommendations from the former
I will not comment on that at this forum, but I will talk to you about that afterwards. Yes, Chris?
By that token, all meetings will presumably be run under Robert's Rules of Order. Then, how will we actually move to a discussion format as you found might be valuable if all meetings are run under Robert's Rules of Order?
Yeah. To clarify my previous statement, there's actually an order of events that are supposed to occur in a meeting. Like, you're supposed to call, roll call, committee meeting minutes unless you say that you're not going to do it, and then committee presentation, and then you can move on to business of the day or whatever. It's just that there's this one structured section of it, but we can always just work around that, or if next year's executive committee deems to put it into the bylaws, they'll be allowed to, there's a flexibility there. And there's also, you can have an intro discussion before the roll call, and then the roll call will signify when the meeting starts. It's just a technicality.
So if I may ask a follow-up question,
yeah.
One could, I suppose, then schedule discussion time prior to the meeting beginning.
Exactly.
And then
yeah.
That's how we would have sort of a discussion.
Right.
Okay.
Like,
thank you.
Yes, Brian.
In the handbook that absolutely no one has seen yet, we can put in there part of what the section is that one example of how a meeting should be run, so that we can get that sort of discussion with yourself about having that first one is the discussion aspect stuff and whatever it is that wants to be, and then
yeah, I comment.
Yes.
As I understand it, I mean, now that you mentioned it like that, the way that FA meetings are usually run has that sort of informal time that's dedicated to the beginning of the meeting and it's supposed to be open mic time. But I find that actually there's very little open mic time involved. I think nobody approaches the mic because it's kind of the most scary approach to mic that we've never seen before or something. So I guess if we're looking at going to the structure, we really should urge the executive committee to structure that time so that actually something is done during it, rather than open mic time just being an item on the agenda that gets quickly moved through and thereby killing the discussion that we have. Thank you.
As a point of clarification, I think Billy was indicating that we should have the breakup session to begin with, so that there would be the interaction between voting and non-voting members. Well, voting members and GPSA members, underneath the terminology of the new charter, at the beginning, just allow people to figure out what's going to happen during the meeting itself. Any other questions or comments? I believe then we should start discussing the amendments that were submitted in writing to me previously, and so we shall go through those and discuss them. They hit upon several of the key points that Tom wanted to hear more input on. One moment. So we'll deal these in the order that we received, and so we have two proposed charter amendments and one bylaw amendment to discuss today. And so these were submitted at the end of the agendas that were electronically emailed, and also I believe they were printed off. And so the first proposed charter amendment was actually proposed by Ben Hebner, who is not here today. Is there another member who feels comfortable speaking for this amendment?
I feel reasonably comfortable speaking.
All right, Chris, take it away.
So, as I understand it through discussions with Ben, the idea behind this is he wants to move away from having all members of the GPSA vote on officers that is proposed in the charter changes, and instead have only voting members that have been selected following the prior meeting to vote on those officers and commissioners. The impetus behind this is largely that field representatives are not or they're more transient than voting members. They don't have to deal regularly with the officers that are going to be scheduling the meetings and making the agenda and everything. Yeah. That's what we're talking about.
Yeah.
Sorry, you're interrupting. But yeah.
No, sorry, I don't. Go ahead.
No, I mean, I don't want to waste
the body's time. So if you have something.
No, I was just going to say, I thought Ben's concern was more about the academic year. That not that field reps were transient, but that they would be voting for an executive that they want to serve under.
Yeah, so, okay, thank you for the clarification.
Sure.
No, and I didn't mean to sound hostile in that. I apologize. Yeah, so not only are they not, I mean, they're potentially not even going to be here next year, sitting as representatives of this field. So it doesn't really set up a good system where you have people that are voting for officers, and then next year they're not going to have to actually serve with those officers, whereas the voting members will have to do that. So the idea behind it is just making sure there's consistency in how the officers are selected. That's primarily why I believe this amendment was proposed. I wasn't prepared to speak on it, so I apologize to the government.
So are you proposing the amendment at this time?
Yeah, I'll propose the amendment.
Do we have a second on the amendment? Second by Nantoba. So now we move into formal discussion. If there's any member who wishes to speak out against the amendment at this time, they may have the floor for 2 minutes. Tom?
I'm going to formally debate this one, since I'm going to do that all the amendments. The committee voted the way it did for the following reasons. One, part of the problem with the previous charter and bylaws was that field representatives felt broadly disengaged from the process of being a member of the GPSA. Membership, we thought, should include certain rights and responsibilities that we've enumerated, and one of those we felt strongly on was the election of officers and standing chairs. Now, think about what happens in practice. You're at one of our meetings. Think to a discussion meeting, particularly, which might be the kind of format we see going forward, where everyone's in the room, everyone can see each other, everyone knows the officers present, and then all of a sudden, it's time for election. And you've been sitting there all year as a field representative, attending the meetings, getting to know what's what, and we say, no, you can't vote on the officers. But they say, I just voted on the voting members. In fact, I just helped pick the voting members. And I've been here all year, it's the last meeting of the year, and you're telling me I can't vote on the officers. Yes, you respond, that is what we're telling you. And it's that kind of dynamic we're wishing to avoid. Now, this is not to say that the field representatives aren't all the things that Chris suggested. It's to say that we trust them in their capacity to not only elect voting members, but to elect good officers.
And with that, we move into formal debate. At this time, any member can speak formally for 1 minute with a question or answer, and there'll be a 30-second response to whoever is directed to. And also, the chair will entertain a motion to exit formal debate and enter informal debate. Chris.
I think Chris and Ben, now we're
going to
push
up the
seat.
Maybe it's over.
I've heard that at a conference once. And I was thinking about to Ben and myself, that a bit long by the chair, but the crux of it was not Tom's comment. Just get this feeling that in the last, rather than the GPSA, there's this de facto and unfortunate and unintended between separation. The field reps are like voting members, like officers, and that the gap between the officers and field reps is quite large. I appreciate that. Separation. And so I agree with Tom that in terms of numbering rights and responsibilities, giving them still represented some capacity within, especially those within, you could say the whole year, without the voting members for the next year, to have to say how they should go in the future next year. And I will yield my time for that.
Evan, says there was no question or productive comments.
Can I make a motion to move into informal debate?
Yes, there is a motion on the floor to move into informal debate. Is there a second?
Second.
Chris Heckman. And we are now in informal debate, so it's much more loose structure. You have a little bit more leniency on time. So, Evan.
I would say that this amendment is about a philosophical difference. The way that the current charter works, not the proposed charter, and the way that Ben's amendment would revert it to is a sort of parliamentary system. You know, you elect your congressman, they go to Washington, and then they pick a speaker of the House, the idea being that they run the internal things of the body. The alternative to that is imagining, this is sort of by analogy, that you elect a president who then represents your interests, and separate from that, you elect a voting body. Congress. I think that the way the SA does this is that they have a campus-wide election. Everybody votes for a president, for a vice president, and they pick members of their colleges. I think there's, I dare say, unanimous agreement in this room that that's not the sort of system we want to move to. The proposed charter, Tom's language, splits the difference, basically. It allows us to have an executive and committee chairs who still represent directly the needs of graduate professional students without having to deal with the apparatus of an election. It's not that the current system is bad, it's just that we think the language as it stands in the proposed charter is better.
Chris.
I understand that the current system provides and actually sort of endorses a measure of marginalization from the non-voting members to voting members and everything like that. And I appreciate your story that you told, Tom, that that actually could happen, and it probably has in previous circumstances where someone says, well, why can't I vote for the president or something? However, exactly what Evan just said is the system that we have. The president and the executive committee do not represent sort of just by being the president of the GPSA, all members of the graduate community, any more than we do. They are a voting member from their area, and they are the ones that are supposed to dictate what happens in a meeting and exactly how the business of GPSA gets directed. I don't see it as a position of popularity as much as just being a chair and an enabler of the business that this body does. So I actually do believe that there is a philosophical difference, and that, and I'm being a proponent of the philosophy that I'm trying to endorse in this proposal. Thank you.
Stephen?
Yeah, I just wanted to address Ben's concern that he expressed in the email about the time issue, in the sense that some field reps, you know, they might be graduating next year, so they won't be serving the GPSA under the officers they elect. But there is a good point that was also raised in the email that the field representatives still have a responsibility to represent their field. And of course, those field members, by and large, will be around next year. So in that sense, I don't think the time argument is substantial.
Chris?
Yes, I think hearing the comment so far, it is a philosophical difference. GPSA president is someone who ensures the proper functioning, runs meetings, blah, blah, he does represent all the voting body members, so also the field representatives, or abstract, broader set of all the graduates going to Cornell. We have one person to do that for 700+ students. And I feel like all of the dichotomy field representatives are unable to elect the officers of the GPSA, that in a sense that they themselves, not only them, but their field or professional school, and the representative may not have that say. And that assumes the field reps represent all the field members that represent, and that's a challenge as well. I have a continuing amount of field, and that's challenging. But if we were to do this, I think we can ensure even a teeny bit more that field representatives are able to have a say in GPSA matters, to elect an executive officer that can do their best job here. And the voting body members have that also.
Chris?
I feel that making the argument that there's a differing of the ability to represent your group as you sort of go down the chain of how many people you represent is, I guess I don't really understand it, because you can't gauge that and you can't really control that in some sense. The areas do have representation and the fields are represented by their representatives. I mean, like, representatives they sent to us, right? So I mean, everyone is represented. It's just a matter of whether their area representatives are doing their job well, I guess. Or I guess I'm just very confused about that. That's my start. I yield my time to Chris if you want to.
Chris.
I can float one idea. I mean, so right now, this president only, under the current charter, the voting appointment application, the current voting members are continuing on voting officers, but not the retired voting members.
Correct.
Would it be even feasible, the third way, that continuing field members and voting members?
I would recommend against that consideration. Due to the lack of institutional knowledge of who actually is defined as a field member, who is a returning member, and their commitment to the GPSA in the next year.
Okay.
field representative?
Yes, because we cannot stipulate when the field actually elects their members. Yes, Nick?
Is there any reference to the returning and arbitration field representative question? I feel like in a lot of cases, if you want your field to have a representative next year, even if you are deciding to retire from that position, you have to go find someone to fill it. So probably when you don't want to have that position next year, so it's not like you're losing that in your vote. I feel like you can hopefully make the decision of voting.
The chair would entertain in the next few minutes the motion to close the debate. But Chris?
I would like to move to close the debate and I call a question.
Is there a second? Seconded by Evan. So now at this time we have an amendment to the proposal of Resolution 6, and it was just previously discussed as outlined in this block of text from this dashed line to this dashed line. And the majority of it has to do with striking the clause of the all members of the GPSA would elect the officers at the last meeting of the year. And this would then the majority of the other sections are just clarifications and re-edits of the proposal. So at this time, what's going to happen is I'm going to call for those in favor to raise their placards and those against to raise their placards. It is only a majority of quorum that has to pass this to make it attached to the Resolution 6.
What is the magic number?
We have 17, so the magic number is 9. So those in favor of the proposed Charter Amendment number 1, please raise your placards now. There are 2. Those in opposition, please raise your placards now. And those abstaining from vote, please raise your placards now. 2. So with a vote of 2-13-2, the amendment does not pass and it will not carry on to Resolution 6. Thank you for your consideration. We are now moving into the second amendment that was proposed by written document by Marquis, and he has the floor to propose it. You would have about 2 to 5 minutes. The chair is flexible.
I want to introduce something today. Almost an option. It's an issue that I wasn't reconciled. One meeting, one dinner. It's an issue that we passed out the last 17 years. And after a 3-2 decision of the Charter Committee, I think I'm compelled to continue with this particular fight. After all of the long hours of debate, coffees and dinners, late night phone calls and things, I just can't allow this to go away from that situation. I've been lulled by stories in the past that you simply wait for diversity to happen, it can happen organically. But this sort of belief is, I guess, tranquilizing gradually. It's not something that is something that we should do, it's something that we should move forward. It's not wrong, rather it's something that's frustrating, in fact. Perhaps if you've never been asked to wait for you've been told that your time is now and you just wait on this, wait for the particular issue to bypass. Maybe if you catch yourself stammering to explain why diversity is even important, or why it doesn't just improve a lot of those immediately affected, proves that's all the bring us all to higher humanity. Or maybe if you see yourselves arguing a position and you're such an eye to meet someone else's who doesn't hold your position on nothing and another such a lot. Maybe then you can understand why I and so many others find it just so hard to just wait for diversity to happen or can't be achieved. The Charter charter review process provides a perfect opportunity to really hash out the issues that affect our culturally diverse practice of population. It provided an unmatched occasion where we could both interlock the unleavened hand of wider policy making with conscious understanding of what's going on in our practice. But maybe I was a bit too optimistic. Maybe I expected a bit too much from this topic. But one thing is clear. If we muffle this dialogue and consign it to another group of people to figure out, kick the tail down the road to another GPSA to tackle, then we've not only failed ourselves, but we failed our institutions. We'll create an existing of a largely, rather a larger task of existence, and exacerbate some of the issues that support the GPSA. I know how I'm feeling it is simply giving away to the next generation. But that kind of appeal feels just our sweet tooth. We need to really think about what matters to our muscle following the GPSA. That's something that's not going to nurture. If we pass this charter without this amendment, then we'll just simply have an incomplete solution. If we pass this charter without this amendment, we will have a newly approved charter that is an incomplete solution. But I know that we didn't come here to do just that. We didn't come here to fear the future. We came to shape it. I know that we can act even when it's hard. Consistently, if we dare to do nothing, if we dare to be indifferent, we'll not only have failed ourselves, we'll have failed our institution, and even worse, failed one another. I'll leave you with the words that Bobby Kennedy spoke. I look around and see things the way they are, and ask why. I dream of things that never were, but they take life. I'm asking that you pass this to me and that this is a betterment of the issue. Thank you. Thank you.
So you can summarize the current amendment that has been proposed prior to being asked for a second, is that underneath section 4.04, underlined, there shall be at least 19 voting members. There will be an additional clause that says, and up to 22 composed as follows, and that it describes what an additional at-large position is. So there is the creation of three additional voting membership positions, additional at-large seats, with the last clause saying GPSA members from demographic backgrounds reflecting the diverse nature of the university are especially encouraged to run for these additional at-large positions. So at this time, if there is a second to this amendment, please raise your flag now. Seconded by Cotton. And at this time, if there is a member who would like to speak out in formal opposition, you'll have 2 minutes to speak. Tom?
I worked with a very smart group of people for 7 months. And unlike the proponent of the amendment, who characterized it as an incomplete solution, I consider this an incomplete process. I don't call this charter the solution. What I'm asking you to do is to continue to push for those things which this charter does not do. I'm less opposed to the spirit of the amendment or the amendment process as I am to engaging in resolutions or changes that might too quickly change the work the committee has spent careful time on. Yes, the committee in its final meeting agreed to vote this particular part out by a vote of 3-2. Tonight, you're going to have the same ability to vote down this by a small majority. And probably, if it is voted down, it will be by a small majority. That is how politics works. What I would encourage every member to do is think about if tonight is the night to push this, or if we need to do some more time to think about what this is actually going to do and how to implement it. I stand in the camp that we have not spent enough time discussing this. And it seems to me that if the committee did not deem it important enough to bring in front of you by that vote, then that's why you entrusted them to vote on these matters internally.
And with that, we enter formal debate. Any member who would like to ask for clarification, comments, or speak out for or against the amendments at this time can. Also, the chair at any time will entertain a motion to move into informal debate. Being that Brian had the first hand, he gets the floor, and then keep your placards up, and I'll try to remember the order in which they're arranged.
And the chair, can I direct to the chair questions at this point?
Yes, you may.
Chris, a lot of this is language that you originally wrote that was discussed in the charter review. Could you discuss the difference between this amendment and what your original proposition was?
Thanks, Brian. Yeah, I appreciate it. So my rationale for this was reflecting marketing interest and making sure that if there are people there interested in starting a voting council and currencies are filled, they have the capacity to do so. Much of the language originally that I wrote, and having my included here, after discussion with my informal working group and members of the charter review committee, we added a couple of stipulations that are not reflected here. And the main stipulation is that the executive committee would decide what to do. So if, say, person A petition to go to voting council after all my petitions were built, they become a 20th council member, a voting member. The petition would not go to CPSA at first. It would go towards the executive committee. It would decide whether they would not be voting on the merits of that person in terms of determining the petition, but whether to vote to expand at all. And if the vote were to be affirmative, they would come for the CPSA saying, we decided by voting X to X to recommend expansion for additional seats, and the seats would be thrown open like an at-large seat, so anyone...
Is there a formal debate? You have 30 seconds.
Anyone could, in theory, run for that. So, no likelihood yet, if you convert that person who initiated the petition, to be unopposed, but if we treat more of an at-large seat versus a more person who's alternative to the someone wants to run, just confirm them. Other people that have that ability to run to that meeting. So that language currently is not in
there. Next up on the comments
was
Evan.
My question is to Marquis. The preamble of our charter says, the preamble of our charter ends with particular effort will be made to ensure that underrepresented groups have access to graduate professional student assembly positions. I suppose that my question would be, and this is not necessarily reflective of a personal position, but just to hash out the amendment, why do you feel that we need additional seats, to quote your wording, for which GPSA members from demographic backgrounds reflecting the diverse nature of the university are especially encouraged to run.
Did one minute to respond?
Essentially, I think that in order to create an institutional structure which fosters greater diversity within the GPSA, I think that adding three seats would sort of institutionalize that mission in the charter. That the charter outlines that we're going to strive toward that, but at current we haven't lived up to the expectations of what the charter is charges with. And this particular provision will allow for that. And furthermore, I think it just allows people to get more involved, more people involved. And if we want to be signing involvement from graduate students and so be it. But if my amendment simply adds three additional seats to encourage this that charge that we give to
okay. May I respond?
You have 30 seconds.
Just speaking from personal experience, I guess that I am I should be very clear. This for me, and I know that you might see this differently, is not a diversity issue. If I oppose this amendment at all, it has nothing to do with opposing diversity in the body. I support that 110%. I think if I were to oppose this amendment, it would have to do with the creation of additional voting seats. I know you and I talked specifically about this, and the language that I suggested was basically cribbed from the SA chart, that we would have a one member permanent at large who would be from a background reflecting the diverse, et cetera, et cetera. I think when we talk about adding additional members, I just think of my own experience when I ran for this current position along with Tom. There were 3 vacancies. There were 2 people running. We couldn't fill the seats that we had. So it, for that reason, I'm just nervous about expanding the size of voting membership.
Fred, can I
get
30 seconds.
And so that's why it's the amendment also allows for that, for those circumstances, that these 3 seats will only be allotted, only in case when all voting seats are compatible. So it's essentially an applicant.
Okay. Thank you.
Kyle has the next comment or question.
Okay. So I was one of the 2 members who voted on the charter review committee that was in support of this. I want to be clear, first of all, that I support approving the charter and voting regardless of the amendment, and we do need to, even if you do want to, if you oppose the amendment, please don't allow that to play the view of the charter as a whole. I think that this is really an opportunity to build. We have to recognize that there was this really sustained effort, a lot of different meetings about how to improve diversity in PCSA, and we asked, these historic and underrepresented groups what they wanted, and this is the end product of that. And I think, we've always ourselves really seriously considered, so much effort went into this that we need to consider taking the step to potentially increase the opportunity to serve on PCSA, not just, but it's not a perfect solution to the issue of whether we have enough seats. But, I think the way this amendment is done is very well done, is that it allows, if there is demand, we have the effective seats, so we don't end up with these vacant seats if there is no demand.
With that, we'll have to move on. So, Billy has the next comment. Then, just kidding.
I guess I have a similar
there is both a pro and con to this on the proposed and the opposed side. Mark, you'll have 30 seconds, and then Tom will have 30 seconds to respond.
Well, that concern was, essentially that was what Gavanos was arguing for initially when she advocated this decision with the charter. But there were some, my position sort of evolved, and that how we define who is in these particular groups. Essay, I think, does a good job with that, but it's sort of understood. It's just sort of understood. It's not really fluid. Or who is a hub, or who is LGBTQ, or who is a part of this particular underrepresented group. Here, I think it just allows for people who represent those the issues of those particular diverse groups to be included, as opposed to what your office is.
Tom, your son?
What would happen if I stood up after this amendment is passed and decided to run for the seat? What would you say? Do I fit the qualifications as outlined in this particular clause? And maybe if we're going to look at skin color, you might say no. Maybe if we're going to look at some other status, for example, having being the first person in your family to come to university for education, that's also considered some sort of recognized disadvantaged status. Or perhaps, and the one that's most salient to what I'm trying to point out, the fact that you're gay doesn't mean you're going to be saying, hey, I'm gay, I should get this spot. You might be a little uncomfortable with that fact, unless you are yourself out and trying to promote yourself as an out individual. So, just think about that for a second.
And with that, we'll move on into Chris has the next comment.
Mark, you mentioned my email to you the other day, last night. I appreciate where you're taking this. We should tap to a larger question we've had since at least the last year and a half as to whether 19 voting members is the appropriate amount to ensure adequate official education you guys discussion to at Cornell. And I and others aren't convinced 19 is a nice number, and how do we allocate seats? Vice for deal alone, deal in the Colorado Bank. I'm not sure that 22 seats that are created ad hoc every year may be the solution here. As someone said to me when I was voting this particular part of the charter a few months ago, if in fact three people at least are going to fill the seats every year, should we have them exist in the charter every year and not just create? I'm not sure it's time to debate merits of that now, but in regards to the essay, it intrigued me. So the essay, my understanding is that it's not any theory of seats are open to anybody, especially from diverse demographic groups. The seats are not
reserved. You have 20 seconds.
For those people, the seats are for, the rat large seats for minority issues, make sure it's a legal right.
Well,
they are at large. Well, if you're a wizard, so if you're at large members,
the chair would also entertain at the time a motion to exit formal debate and enter informal debate. So we have it's moved by Chris. Is there a second?
Second.
Seconded by Stephen. We are now in informal debate. Yes, you may respond.
Yeah, so they have a HUDS group, a historically underrepresented group, international school, rather. These are the LGBTQ students. And then down that one. So these are they're just designated. They're sort of at large, but they are at large, yes, in that they and the people and a lot of people are able to like this problem.
Thank you. Moving on, Stephen.
Yeah. So I was the issue here is diversity. And I was part of a lot of these discussions and working group meetings and all these things. And at a moment in time, I was actually in support of this. And I think throughout this meeting, I started to converge on my own view of what the proper solutions is. So I kind of want to explain that. To my knowledge, from talking with a lot of more senior members of the GPSA, in the past, the GPSA has been quite a diverse group of people, the voting membership and the executive body. You know, it wasn't too long ago that the president of the GPSA was actually an international Chinese woman. I think that speaks to the fact that the GPSA structure isn't sort of in any way discouraging of diversity. Now clearly this year, with all due respect to everyone here, diversity has been a little on the downside. And I think that's sort of the thing we're trying to fix here. And but like I said, I don't think the structure is really the issue. The issue to me it seems to be more about engagement and a sense of how well do you know the voting members if you are a member of these historically underrepresented groups. And that's what we've tried to address in the rest of the parts of the charter, where we have specific people, specific committees, the executive vice president that are trying to focus on outreaching these diversity groups. And that way, ensure that in the future, the GPSA is a diverse body, which, of course, diversity, I think, is one of the extremely important. So that's all I want to share.
Yep, Jenny?
Just a quick follow-up. So how would you choose somebody that connects both the kind of qualification and would there be any communication
I would say that it would depend on that particular GPSA. But at least my vision is that there wouldn't be any barrier for people who believe they represent the issues of particular diversity groups. A white and in fact blue male believes you represent the issues of larger historically underrepresented community, then I think that's true.
Can the GPSA at the time somebody will kind of go up?
Yes.
And then why?
Right.
Why is it say no, we're not voting by at all?
One moment. A point of clarification and a note from the chair. The clarification would be in the actual lettering of the amendment. It does not stipulate that this has to be
a actual diversity pop. It's actually just an additional at-large seat that can be implemented at the discretion of the GPA bank. So then each member still has to run and still be elected through a process of actually being voted by the entire members of the GPSA. So that's just a point of clarification. And the point from the chair is that it is 6:50 p.m., so just consider that in your comments and your discussions. We have one other proposed bylaw amendment, and if we wish to entertain other amendments, we need to be careful with time. So with that, Tom, do you want to respond?
A response and a clarification. I'll start with clarification. The charter amendment as proposed does not conform to the language which is adopted in our charter. It lists cabinet positions, whereas we have voting members. That's a holdover from previous version. And then the response is that this emerges to me as a way to expand the voting members of the GPSA, and the diversity piece is especially encouraged. And so until that encouragement is institutionalized, we're not sure that these will actually be filled by diverse candidates. It could very well be three more of so-called non-diverse candidates who could take these positions if we don't institutionalize the change we want to see. And that is why the charter has the piece on focus group on diversity, meant to bring in all the groups in a conversation.
You have 30 seconds.
Yes, I'll take a friendly amendment to actually strike that cabinet position.
When we're going to move set amendments, I will have to move set amendments.
I hope that.
Okay.
I wholeheartedly agree that if we don't institutionalize this piece about making sure that we are cultivating this diversity, and the GPSA, that those seats will help be able to go filled by any person. But I think that now the GPSA, if we pass this amendment to the charter, then we're putting the onus now on groups from unrepresented backgrounds, that we've done our part, and now it's time for unrepresented groups to actually step up and actually send people to the GPSA to be seated in this position.
Moving on, Brian, unless there's a motion. No, Brian.
Thank you. So it's a statement and then a question, and then I believe this is the chair to answer the question. My statement is, you just said that we need this statement of diversity in my time leadership, except that statement is already in section 4.02. So here we're having a restatement of that again. So I understand why we're having that statement. My question is more, why are we restating it again? It's already stated in the exact same chapter. So my question to the chair is, or maybe having to see the up on Robert's rule, is there a problem with having an even number?
This is an issue that Mike Walsh raised. I don't know where that's coming from. Because if you think about it right now, we have 19, but the chair doesn't vote, so we have an even number.
The chair votes if it breaks the tie.
If it breaks the tie. So if we had 22, we'd have 21, which means we would never get tied.
So the chair.
I don't see how it's an issue.
Unless extension.
Well, and then the chair votes the...
So it would work out. I don't think the rules stipulate that there has to be...
Oh, it's a general question. I'm not using that question to shoot down this. It's just, we have an odd number, and now we're going up to an even number, and the benefit of everyone is just going more.
So the current time is 6:54 p.m. The chair would entertain a motion to extend debate till 7:15 p.m. or to call the question and actually vote on the amendments or any of the above. Chris?
I vote to call the question. All right, move to call the question. Second.
So with that, we now go through the same process we did for the first charter amendment, in which I'll ask for the members who support the amendment of the that was proposed to section 4.04. to add up to 3 additional voting member positions, the additional at-large seat. If you are in support of the amendment as written, please raise your placards now. support this amendment.
Okay.
We're voting on this. If you support this, raise your black or down.
As in you want three of the
as in you want this amendment to pass.
Yeah.
Okay. So one, two, three, four, five. So five in favor. All those opposed, please raise your placard. One, two, three, four, five, six, seven, eight, nine, ten. Ten. And all those abstaining, please raise your placards. Now, two. At a vote of 5-10-2, the Second Amendment does not pass either. So moving on. There's a motion to extend the meeting. Is there a second? There's a second. We will now adjourn at 7:15 p.m. There was seconded by Sir Tempest. So at this time, we shall now discuss, we'll take a moment, is there any other charter amendments that should be proposed at this time by any member? Being none, you still have opportunities if something dawns on you from now until you vote to propose amendments. Is we shall move into discussing the proposed bylaw amendment. And so this was proposed by Brian Forster, and he would just like to present it.
Yeah, so this is sort of, I'll give him like digging in the bylaws, Ben Hefner's job. This came out of the Mental Health Committee's last meeting, the idea that all different committees all have activities that they want publicized and to go to communications because they're the ones responsible for advertising in the DHSA activity committee activities, that sort of thing. So the amendment that I suggested is that the committee will designate one committee member to contact all committees and focus groups in the state bylaws to collect any activities and then make them public through the GPSA info or any other means. I also include the graduate school because the graduate school is currently redoing their website and they still have to work out some kinks in it, but apparently they will be able to link our calendar with the graduate school calendar. So in that sense, the person working on this and putting up events for the GPSA would automatically get sent to the graduate school, so it's not additional work, it's just here specifically stating that someone from the committee specifically contact all the other remaining GPSA committees to find out what about that.
What committee are you
Communications
committee?
This is the communications committee that a member of the communications committee contacts all other committees, and now that I'm looking at you, I think I guess we'd have to also say the
GPSA
because you're not a committee. Wait a minute.
Technically, yeah, we would be separate.
Don't worry about it. Okay.
That's fine.
So, Tom, do you take this as a friendly amendment to the bylaw?
No.
No? All right. At this time, is there a second to the amendment?
Second.
Seconded by Chris Clark, and then also later by Evan. Tom, now we move into formal debate. If there's any member who wishes to speak in opposition, this is your time. You have 2 minutes. Tom, go right ahead.
This bylaw amendment comes too late, first of all, to be properly considered by the body. Secondly, in the current bylaws as written, there is the following under duties. The committee will maintain the GPSA info listserv and is in charge of the creation of the GPSA info newsletter. Distribution will be coordinated by the committee in cooperation with the graduate school to reach all students registered through the graduate school and with the Johnson Business Law and Veterinary School to reach the registered professional students. So, to me, one of the things that this amendment does fail to do that the previous duty requires it to do is to reach out to the registered professional schools to get another flaw in it. And finally, I think this is fairly well enumerated in the current duties of the committee.
Procedural clarification, amendments can be received from the floor, so this would, no amendment is too late to receive for the resolution. And so at this point, we are now in the formal debate. Is there any member who wishes to speak in formal debate, or should have a motion to move into informal debate? Yes, Evan.
So moved.
There's a motion to move into informal debate. Is there a second? Seconded by David. So now we are in informal debate. Evan.
Motion to close debate and call a vote.
Is there a point of information or a point of order?
You cannot second my thing. I'm just kind of moving along. Someone will oppose it. That's fine.
Okay, and it's seconded by Billy. So now we are actually calling the amendments, and we will be voting on the amendments.
No, actually,
opposed.
Oh, you opposed. Sorry. That's a good thing. All right, and I believe you have something to
say. I'm just offering the option.
Yeah, I guess I have a question about it before you vote. So if you're gender in charge of, or would have been in charge of,
GPSA committee and said, do you have anything we need to publicize in the GPSA info on the website, etc. So it's not, I disagree with Tom on this point. It's not redundant with the current charge, and it doesn't add a responsibility that didn't exist before in as relates to the GPSA.
My point is
that
the responsibility that existed before has been fulfilled
in
its entirety, and just
adding
more into it.
I think the reason why I plan to vote for this amendment is because I think it's going to assist the Communications Committee in making sure they have material. They can say, you there, Appropriations, do you have any information? Yes, I do. Let me write it up for you. It goes back to the Communications Committee, gets bundled together, gets sent out. I think it's actually a way to improve that problem, to make sure that there's material.
Jen has response?
I agree in that it streamlines the process. So there's that, you know, avenue set up that there will be communication between the communication committee and the other committees. So the committee chairs are aware of that. They will provide the information. And so it's more connected as opposed to the strength of it. I feel like it's a problem.
Are there any other questions, comments, or motions at this time? Yes, Evan?
Motion to close debate.
There's a motion to close debate, and seconded by Stephen. Now we are going to go through and vote on the bylaw amendments presently, and so it is as written above, with the shift and all of the material would be moved down by one subsection. So if you are in support of the amendment as written to the bylaw portion of the charter and bylaws, please raise your placard now. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11. 11 in favor. Those opposed, please raise your placards now. 1, 2, 3. And those abstaining, please raise your placards now. 1, 2, 3. So with a vote of 11-3-3, the bylaw amendment passes. And as a reminder, the bylaws are considered every year at the beginning of the year, so this could be up for debate again at the first meeting of next year. So with that, all amendments that were received previously have been covered and voted upon. And so at this time, the chair would entertain any other amendments, any other questions, any other comments on Resolution 6 itself. And there's also the ability to have a motion to close the debate on Resolution 6 and vote on it. Yes, Nicole.
Okay, I just wanted to say that I really think you worked very hard, the Charter Review Committee, and everyone who's involved in this process, you worked really hard
poured in a lot of effort and time and thinking about these issues really carefully. And I really think the spirit of this new charter is in sort of more inclusive and better communication, which I think is really the biggest struggle that we had this year. And so I just wanted to say thank everyone for their work and to
yes, Chris?
Yeah, a couple quick questions and information. Section 6.02C of the charter, is that added since the last time the charter gave me that time I was in the open source committee?
No.
That was in there, okay. I think then for section 2.09, if any ad hoc, I don't think you add anything about appropriate focuses here, or is that not necessary?
When you read it under what are you talking about?
Well, under section 2.09, GKSA shall authority over matters concerning internal operations, yada yada yada. I'm sorry, 209B. GKSA will authority over matters concerning standing in that hot committee, and may establish standing in that hot committee. In the interest of making sure you're basically covered, you're going to say anything about subcommittee. I'm not seeing it.
Hold on, there is no 209B. We're talking about the charter.
Charter, yeah. 2.09.
I guess 2.09A.
Could be in one of those.
Do I not have?
It's not showing up in my version.
Yeah, question I have to highlight. I want to show you that focus groups that are unique to this charter. They should be integrated under the general responsibility of CPSA under the general operations. Or is that not happening?
Yes, the council may have assigned
it. I would say no, because the focus group is within the committee and
the fund. I think it's wrong by the way.
I would say the way it's written is fine, because the focus group is in that committee that we mentioned
earlier, so
no need.
Okay.
And one other question, section 4.05, I can find it. So we have a provision for filling vacant graduate student seats in graduate school. Vacant professional school seats on the left. I'm not sure, if no one fills a professional school seat, does that seat then become open at large at the graduate
school? Sounds good as
well. We have no control over the professional schools.
Okay, period. So if that doesn't elect someone in a couple weeks,
the seat would be considered vacant and it would not count in the.
Well, not forever.
Okay.
Yeah, okay.
Evan?
I want to urge people strongly to vote in favor of this proposed charter. I again second the points that have been made. We all worked very hard on this. Process that goes back for me 18 months, several of us sitting around this table. I think I want to echo something, and I'll say this more to Marquise after. When I was sitting next to Ari, when he said that diversity, I think, and I agree with what Steve said, is a communications issue. I don't think it's a structural issue. I think that we really need to make an effort, and we have done so in this document, to reach out to groups, to make sure they know we're here, to make sure that they run for seats. I think that fixes the problem. I mean, when I came in, there was one humanities representative. I said, I don't like this. We've made a real effort this year to reach out to the humanities field, and we've increased involvement. It's been successful. So please vote in favor of this charter.
Are there any other questions, comments, or motions? Yeah, Chris.
I said two more very quick ones that I would fix real quick. There's something in 3.0 bylaws, section 3.05G, II, under GPSA internal budget, it should be 2 weeks prior to the second schedule.
Repeat the section, 3?
3.05GII.
Please write it down and send it to us, and we'll write it in.
Okay. And absolute last question, on section 3.10, the UA reps can't be voting members. Evan, aren't you a UA rep?
Yes. Our current charter requires one of the three UA reps to be a voting member.
Okay.
But the UA has changed its
UA.
Which one to do?
Right, in the US.
sorry?
In the UA.
Sorry, I misunderstood the question.
But the voting members, the GPSA will select two for the UA exact.
Yeah.
These delegates are required to report. These delegates shall be considered ex officio non-voting members of the GPSA. The language that says at least one of the voting members were struck out.
That's right.
The UA changed its
I don't have a problem with striking it. I don't have a problem with striking it out. I just want to make sure that...
The language doesn't say that the GPSA, the members that the GPSA appoints to the UA don't get to vote on the UA, does it?
No, it says these delegates to the UA shall be considered ex officio non-voting members of the GPSA.
Oh, yeah. Well, that's basically the way it works right now. There's been a change in the UA charter.
Right.
The UA charter now says that the presiding officers of all constituent assemblies are a voting member on the UA. So under the system that starts now, today, Preston or whomever is the next president becomes a voting member. The difference in this language is that it now requires that the other two be non-GPSA voting members. I think that's probably a good thing because otherwise you have overload.
Okay,
Mike Walsh is making funny faces.
Can you please rephrase that?
So the way that the current charter works, not the new charter, is that we appoint three representatives to the UA, one of which must be a voting member. The other two can be anyone. They can be voting, or they can be non-voting, or they can be Mike Walsh.
So help me God.
The way I understand this language is that it says the presiding officer is mandated by the UA charter.
Point of clarification, I don't think the members understand what's being spoken about. Could the chair clarify?
So what is occurring at the moment is the university assembly switched its membership policy, so the president of this body shall serve as a member of the university assembly.
I understand that.
But the wording that you have asked for clarification was the two delegates that they consider ex officio non-voting members of the GPSA. That's actually a holdover from the last charter in this wording form. So if there's a more clear and concise way to explain it, the chair would entertain an amendment, or Tom?
I am responsible for everything in here, and let me respond to what this is about. The UA has, in my mind, failed to give us clear guidelines on the membership that we are expected to send, whether they ought to be voting members of our body or some other person who is a graduate professional student. Until such time as that is clarified, I think that it should be dropped immediately and it should be brought up with the new discussion of bylaws in August. This is not an issue that should be even talked about at this time.
Yeah, I would. I think that, if I may respond to the UA actually did discuss these sorts of things. And we decided not to give guidance to the constituent assemblies. The idea being the constituent assemblies can best choose who can represent them, other than that the presiding officer would.
I agree with Tom and discuss the next time.
So, as chair, is there an amendment proposed on the floor? There is no amendment at the current time?
How about this? If these delegates are not already voting members, they shall be considered ex officio non-voting members of the GPSA.
That would make more sense.
That deal was
so bad.
The chair would interrupt 1 second at 7:13 p.m., so if you need to extend the debate, the chair would be unhappily willing to do so.
In that case, we can...
Let's fix it in the fall.
We'll fix it later. It's not going to flow in there.
Underneath clarification, there's no amendment on the floor, so this will need to be clarified as we figure out our relationship with the University Assembly in the future.
Motion to bring the charter up to review for a vote.
There's a motion on the table There's a motion to consider the Resolution 6 and close debate. Is there a second?
Second.
I would actually say yes, Jenny, beat everyone on that. So with that, there is a motion to consider Resolution 6 on the table. So those in favor of passing Resolution 6 with the amendments proposed by Brian Forrester for the bylaws, please raise your placards at this time. The 15-4 that I can see, somebody else wants to count that?
I don't like.
No.
Keep the placards up.
Yes. 15-4. Any opposed, please raise your placards at this time. And those abstaining, please raise your placards at this time. With a vote of 15-0-2,
R6, the new bylaws and charter passes, and this will be submitted to President Thornton for review. And as probably one of the longest serving members sitting in this room, this is not going to be the final debate on charter and charter issues. It's going to be the final structure debate, which will take up the majority of a year. Therefore, I suggest people to review the charter in the future to see what it is and what possible improvements to be made, but don't do this again. Because if I was the author of the charter 3 years ago now, and it was the one that prescribed it 2 years later to review it, and it's a process that I don't think that best serves the GPSA moving in the future. We should look at how to create the most positive culture and involve the most amount of members. And with that said, we are at 7:15 p.m. The chair to entertain a motion to adjourn. Or Tom would like some moments to speak.
Good and welfare. I promise everyone a beer at the chapter house. That's where I'm going. Sunday.
Evan.
Motion to adjourn.
There's a motion to adjourn.
Okay.
And there's the second vice. Let's go.
So seriously,
what's going
on here?
This has been a production of Cornell University, on the web at cornell.edu.